EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is
dispatch.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever you are listening from on this planet. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Tonight we are joined by Tad calling from New Zealand. And Tad's encounter occurred midsummer of 1989, just outside of Stratford-upon-Avon in the UK, while camping with his wife in a crop field. Tad is up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal, and if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Tad. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nick.
Thank you for coming on today and calling from New Zealand.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invite.
It's great to have you here. Now, Tad, you have an encounter to share with us. So would you like to start at the very beginning, please, sir?
Sure. It started in 1989. And in those years, the favorite thing for me and my partner, now my wife, was motorcycle touring. We had a little 250 trail bike, and a lot of the weekends when the weather was good, we used to go around the backwaters of Britain. We liked staying in the quiet places and maybe chatting to locals in the pub and having some local ale, and we'd often just truck up to a village and ask if anyone did camping. Sometimes there were campsites, sometimes there was people who said, oh yeah, you can camp here, or quite often there was farmers who'd say, oh yeah, I've got a field where I sometimes let people camp. And that was the best, because you woke up in the morning and you had a whole field to yourself. It was beautiful. You're right in the countryside, and then we'd spend the day touring around just taking in the sights. And on this particular trip, we decided to do that kind of thing, but also take in a play at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre in Stratford. So we go to a little village outside Stratford, and we just pull up outside a shop and go in and say, does anyone do camping? We get pointed to a farm, and the farmer says, yeah, you can go down the back of my farm. There's a big field down there. You're welcome. And it was a crop field. It was a really big field, and it had been, the crops had been reaped. And so we trundle down into that field, and in the middle, there's a copse of trees and a little pond. And we thought, okay, let's set up camp there. And we noticed there's lots of stubble strewn around everywhere. So we gather up a heap of that and put it under a little dome tent. And that's going to be comfortable for the night. And we do the same when we put a ground sheet on it. And that's going to be a comfortable place to sit, like a outdoor divan. So that done, we decided to go into town and see if we can get tickets for the performance. And it was A Midsummer Night's Dream, fantastic performance. And later on, we're coming back and it's dark and we drive through the farmyard and past the outbuildings and through the gate and down into the field, the slope down to where the pond is. And so I'd have a cup of tea. So we're sitting there having a cup of tea, looking out of the countryside. It's a beautiful, fairly warm evening. And it's time for bed. And Sarah's going to tidy up. And she's good at camping, and she's just going to get the bed sorted and tidy up. And I thought, well, I'll lie here now and do a bit of stargazing. So I did. And I'm stargazing, enjoying it, feeling very happy. It's the start of a holiday, very peaceful. It's a lovely evening. And I'm looking at the stars, and that thing happens where your eyes adapt. And then all of a sudden, you see a lot more stars. And then as you keep just staring upwards, you see another layer of stars. You feel like you're seeing further into the sky at night. But then things started to get strange in that this sort of experience of being able to see further and further took a grip on me. It wasn't me doing it or allowing it to happen as I was, you know, just unfocusing and letting more light come in. It was as if I was up there in the sky and I could see a huge grid of stars, and then I'd go through it and then I'd be seeing further. And it was more than seeing, it was like I was still lying on the ground sheet, but it was part of my consciousness was up in the sky. It was quite strange. And I suppose it was something like remote viewing or astral travel. It wasn't those things, but that's the only sort of frame of reference I can put it in. So anyway, one minute I'm right up into deep space and the next I'm back on the ground sheet, and I get up a little bit wobbly, but no, none the worse for wear. It didn't really shake me that much. And I see Sarah still just preparing the tent for the night. And I notice a change in the atmosphere and the whole area around us. It's as if time was going a little bit slower. Everything seems to be gravid or more serious. It was a little bit like that. Those few moments in a theater where they dim the lights and everyone's quiet and there's a sense of anticipation. Something is about to happen, except I didn't know what was about to happen. Things looked more different. There's a mode on some TVs I've had called cinema mode, and the colours are a bit richer and the blacks are a bit blacker. They do something with the contrast. There's more contrast. And I just don't know where this atmosphere is coming from. And then I notice in the copse of trees that's nearby, there seem to be these coloured lights. And it's as if someone strung fairy lights in these big trees. And not many of them. But I'm trying to get a grip on, is that really there? And I say to Sarah, do you see those lights? And she says, yeah, I can see those. And I'm thinking, well, no, I don't, this can't be. I try to understand it as maybe there's lights in the distance, maybe there's some houses or something between, you know, behind the trees, and I can't see them, and they're just shining through the trees. And then I realized that no, there's no hills or houses over there. And so I'm thinking, well, this is a strange effect. It was disconcerting because now they're becoming mesmerizing. And I realize they're actually little globes, little balls of light, just in and of themselves, not shining. And there's they're scintillating, and they're taking your attention, and they're coming on and off and in patterns. And there's a red one, and there's a white one, and there's aqua blue, and there's something like an orange or bird sienna. And they're moving in a little circle pattern, and now they're rising into the higher branches. And not only that, now time seems to slow down just a beat again. Things are happening more slowly. And I'm getting transfixed, and I started to realize that behind the lights or with the lights, there's something big, there's something there, but I can't see it. And it's either in the trees or it's behind the trees. And it's almost like there's a big, huge black mist and it's forming or taking on shape. And looking back on it now, I remember a joke we used to tell as kids, which was, you know, how do elephants hide in the forest? They climb up the cherry trees and paint their toenails red. It was like something, using these lights to hide. There was something going on. And then all of a sudden I realized there's something there. It's just that I'm refusing to see it. And then it's like I can see a bit more of it and it's interacting with me. It's almost as if I need to countenance it being there so it can manifest. And it's like it's delving into my subconscious. It seems as if it's got a shape it definitely wants to be, but we've got to negotiate what that shape is, what it needs to be so that I will see it, because I don't want to see it. I don't want it to be there, but it's insistent and it keeps getting more and more definite and real until all of a sudden it's taken shape. It's taken, it's manifested, it's there. And for a second, I blank it out. No, I'm not taking that in, but then it really is there. And it, now it's above the trees. And it's a craft. And the little lights that were flashing, they're now embedded in its outer shell. And they're still doing that flashing thing, which is really mesmerizing. So just in awe, not totally scared, a bit freaked, because this is a natural. And it's about the size of a double-decker bus. And I could have thrown a tennis ball and hit it. And it's just hovering there, silent. And I'm thinking, good grief, this is a UFO encounter. Why didn't I realize earlier? But it was so paranormal. It was like a big occult, magical outdoor theater spectacle show. Not like, you know, flying saucers zipping here and there. This thing had manifested and it was changing time, changing space, affecting my consciousness, and it was creating a huge, huge atmosphere in the whole area. And it's there. And I kind of thought, oh, I don't want it to be there. I don't want to be here. This is unnatural. It was a transgression. It was, you know, at the least it was very cheeky. At the worst, it was very opportunistic. And yeah, and then I noticed that in the field beyond our field, there's some vehicles coming towards us. I think, oh, they were quick, because I think they're four-wheel drive vehicles. And you just see like the tops, and they're white 4x4s, and they've got headlights. And I'm trying, as they're coming nearer, it's the same kind of thing. I can't take it in. I want them to be things that they're not. They weren't 4x4s. They were actually these little boxy craft about the size of, you know, if you cut the top of a SUV off and painted it all white, and stuck one light, and they were very close to the ground, and there's about three or four of them, and they were coming towards us, and it's like a zigzag path, and I thought, wow, this is getting busy. And next, I noticed that there were two orbs. They were like beach ball size, and they were like pearly white, and they were along the hedgerows coming left and right as I looked down this big field. And I remember thinking, wow, they're moving like barn owls. I've seen a barn owl once, and it sort of hunts by sort of fluttering up and down really close to the hedge line. And they were doing that. They weren't traveling in straight lines. They were bouncing and fluttering and, you know, taking their time moving down the field towards us. And one passed just out of vision on the right, and one passed just out of vision on the left. And all of a sudden, that changed things for me. It gave me a jolt. I thought, oh, I've been flanked. They're going to be behind us soon. And there was something about these things being in front and behind that I really didn't like. And I got alarmed. I seemed to be able to use that alarm to shake myself out of the mesmerizing effect of the big craft and the lights. And now I'm looking at it, and now it's scary. It's because it's so big. And I just didn't know what was going to happen next, what its capabilities were, what its intention was, what it could do, what I should do. And it's just there. And that's when I got a kind of, I don't know, some people call it a download or a message. And I don't know where it came from, whether it was from the craft or whether it came upwards from like a joint universal subconsciousness. It wasn't like a thought in my head. It was like a message. It was very clear, and it said, this is the other. Could have been like, we are the other. And you just got the message. And this has always been happening. Like, this isn't, you know, random or rare. You know, this happens. And it's hasn't happened to you. And then the next thing was, if you want to say safe, you really should walk away. And that's when I thought, okay, yeah, I agree. Time to act like a shepherd and get the flock out of here. And so I say to Sarah, hey, let's go. And I realize as I'm looking at her, she's totally in a trance. Now, transpires that she hasn't seen anything since the original little fairy lights when they were low down in the trees. And she just went into a trance. That's last she remembers. So I gave her a shake and I say, can you go get in the tent and get my knife? Which she does. And then she hasn't seen anything, but you can tell by my tone of voice that this is something serious. And so I say, let's go. And that's when she catches a glance at the craft. And this is where our memories diverge. I'd say that, you know, we beat a dignified retreat. She says we ran like hell up the field towards the farm. She's probably right. And when we get there, we get to the outhouses and we stop near a corral, and there's two donkeys in there wickering. And they're obviously very upset and they're weaving back and forth. But after a while we get there, they calm down. And I sense that we're kind of like on the edge of this sphere of influence. I mean, tempting to run into the village and wake everybody up and say, come and look at that. But I don't know. Something was saying like, yeah, you do that. And you go back and there's nothing there. You're going to look like a right idiot. So we just stop and we watch. And this has been going on for a while now. Now we're watching them. We realize they've got a mission. They seem to be doing purposeful things. The orbs are making for the lattice towers of the electricity system, the electricity pylons, big ones they were. And they're showing a lot of interest, and they're weaving in and out them and up and down them. So one side of the field with the lattice tower, one the other side of the field with the lattice tower. And so that's what they're doing. The big craft, which is the shape it's taken, is, I describe it as a slightly squat D20, the type of die you use for Dungeons and Dragons, which is really strange. I've never played that game, but it was, you know, multi-sided and matte black and just sucking in the light, and it's just there, and it's just audacious. Just, you know, to just appear from nowhere and just stick around. And the white things, the boxy little craft, they seem to be doing a grid search, a big wide grid search, and they're like moving, covering all the area of the big field beyond us. And this goes on for some time. I think the whole episode took perhaps 20 minutes in all. And eventually the big D20 thing that rises up a bit and starts moving off, and the white craft underneath it, lower down at like hedgerow level, they're going with it, and the orbs are going, and they're slowly meandering down this big huge valley into the distance. And that was quite a relief when that happened. And it didn't last long, because all of a sudden on the other side of the horizon, there's this two new craft. And I think, oh, that's too much. This is ridiculous. I don't want any more. But as they approach, they've got flashing lights. I can hear the jet engines, and I realize they're two fighter jets. And they're converging, you know, like a V-shape. They're quite low down. They're converging on the object, the craft, which is now off into the distance. And they pass us, and they're getting nearer and nearer the craft. And I don't know, it's hard to tell now things are in the distance, what the distances are, but they get fairly close. And this thing just zips up into the sky in a way, like just incredible speed, just leaves them in its dust. Almost as if it was trying to make them look silly or taunting them. And they go off, and that's it. And the strange thing is, we walk down to the tent and we don't talk about it. We just zip up and go to sleep. Have a good night's sleep, get up in the morning, pack down the tent, pack down all our things, strap it to the bike, drive off. And it's not until we stop for the first stop to get some petrol and get some breakfast. And after that's over, we're sitting there on the concrete slab somewhere outside the garage. And I say, we did see those things last night, didn't we? And Sarah says, yeah. And we just recap what we saw. And but mainly we just got on with the rest of our lives, the rest of our holiday. And that was 30 odd years ago. And it's only recently that I thought much about it. You know, once in a blue moon, you think, oh, well, remember that thing we saw? What the hell was it? Where did they come from? What were they doing? But it wasn't a big thing, and it didn't tell people because, you know, if they haven't seen something like that, they're unlikely to believe you. I hit a phase where every day the memory really vividly was coming back to me, and unbidden, and it was every day I thought about it, and it would like roll like a cinema roll, and I thought, I've got to do something about this. I don't want to keep having this memory. It must mean something. There must be something for me to do with it or do about it. It didn't. I couldn't make any meaning out of it. And I'd read a few books and things and thought, well, I'm not going to. If everybody else can't. And I thought, I must get the story out into the world. I think that's it. So I wrote it down. And I wrote a short story to the best of my ability. And I sent it to someone who had a blog, and they posted it. And the whole mashed potato, imagine a mashed potato thing with the compulsion, think of this event, went. And ever since, that's it. It was solved. So that's my story.
Very, very interesting. So the object, you said it like a D20 die. So that would have been like a polyhedron.
Yeah.
A polyhedron shape, okay. And about the size of a double-decker bus.
Yeah.
So a big object. Where you first saw the lights, like the fairy lights in the trees, that area there, is it a heavily wooded area or is it like a copse of trees?
Just a copse of trees. It's strange. I mean, it's kind of like it was using the lattice of the trees to allow me to join the dots. Do you know what I mean? You know those kids' picture books where you join the dots?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You draw the connect between the numbers. And you often hear people with UFO encounters saying, oh, it rose just above the tree line. And there's always this phrase, just above the tree line. And yeah, this thing took shape in behind the trees because it was like a matrix you could look through and put lines, put meaning on, and then it was as if once it had, I'd allowed myself to recognize something of the shape. There was a feedback loop. And, oh, okay, now we're getting somewhere. There was a good, now, okay, try was trying on this for size, and once it got to something where I couldn't ignore it, boom, force, and it's there. It's no longer semi-solid. It's like this, you know, solid craft.
The surface itself is matte black, and was there any lights on the object?
Yeah, the same lights that had started it all off were now like embedded in the corners.
So it's like it detached themselves and then reconnected.
Well, I don't know. I they were things of their own when I first saw them. So I can't tell if they detached or not. Or as if, you know, they were put there, then they were absorbed. I didn't see that. They're just like one minute they were independent things, and then something formed and it seemed to absorb them into its outer surface for the purpose of keeping the mesmerism going. Totally fascinating, gorgeous, beautiful colors. Because we were so close, it was like, first of all, there's these little colored globes of light moving around in the trees, and then it's just them. I mean, the lower down in the trees, there wasn't enough to hide a big craft like that. It's only when they moved up and then this mist formed around them
And then as it got higher and higher, then all of a sudden this thing started concretizing. So it couldn't have hit. That's why I tell a joke about the elephant. You couldn't have hidden this thing behind those trees, is what I'm saying. There would be, if it was solid and always solid, you would have just seen it because it was bigger and wider than the trees.
And this was in 1989, and this memory is still quite fresh.
Yes. Yeah, it's like it just came back, and because it's played so many times, and it's there, I can put myself back in that field, and I remember the sequence of events. I can remember what we thought, our first impression of what this was all about. I'm not saying that this is what it is, but we try to put it into a frame of reference. I thought, well, my stargazing was like an EPIRB setting off an emergency signal, because that was like a signal going right up into the sky. And I thought, oh, I must have triggered something. And then what Braff was doing was, it seemed to be a search because of the grid-like pattern. They seemed to be looking for something. I don't know what they're looking. Maybe they saw, oh, this one of our kind down there. Someone had sent up a message and they just found two monkeys. And they were, you know, they're disappointed. I don't know. But now I just say that because that was just like a first impression.
Sure. And you seem to have, before you witnessed it, you seem to have connected with something. It's strange that either you were meant to be there to witness this.
Yeah.
Do you feel perhaps that may have been the case?
I feel it's a possibility. There's other possibilities. I just generally don't know. I mean, years later, more recently, I've seen correspondences with what I did or what was induced in me first as a form of HEIS or CE5. That's got parallels, but it's just very surprising that I did something like that, A, unintentionally, and B, not knowing what I was doing. So I hit on something, a mental state, accidentally, or maybe it was induced in me so that the events could unravel. And although there seemed to be purposeful activity, I don't know if it was or not, it is also equally, it just seemed to be a bit of a show, putting on a bit of a show for us. Yeah, beyond that, I just don't know what they were doing there or why.
I did like you how you described it in the email. You said perhaps a bit like Close Encounters if the director was Aleister Crowley.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. It was, you know, it wasn't like metal or craft with beings in zooming around and beaming you down on you. Or it was a bit quasi-technological, a bit AI, but it was a bit, it had a feel of paranormal. I mean, it's in that area where it was happening when we were slightly on the edge of it. Looking back now, I get the sense of it's like two worlds mixing. And the only way I can describe it is, I got fishing off rocks and off big man-made harbours and natural harbours. And at high tide, you get the incoming tide mixing with the outgoing tide. And there's that point where there's two, it's all water, but there's two bodies of water. It's all the sea, but they're not the same. And then they can quite easily mix, but you can tell there's a difference. Or by a big estuary where the salt water is mixing with the clear water. I got a strong sense of that looking back on it. Not at the time, but I'm thinking that there was something going on where, yeah, two realities or two dimensions just merging for a while.
Interesting. That certainly is an interesting one. Now, prior to that experience in 1989, did you have an experience before or even any interest?
No. No real interest. Obviously, you hear and see the film Close Encounters and you hear the odd report. I'd read a book a long time ago just because my mother brought it home from a bring and buy sale. And it was by Timothy Good. And I thought, that was interesting, but it wasn't like a topic for me. I did hear from friends of surfers from the village where I grew up. They used to go down in West Wales. And apparently there was a bit of a flap going on down Haverford West area. And they used to go surfing sometimes when the surf was up down there. And then they'd stop and they'd go to a particular place high up somewhere, and more often than not in those days, they'd see some UFOs. And then, so people who didn't surf used to go along with them to see the UFOs. And I was a young teenager, and that was by word of mouth, so.
Yeah, that is true. Havenford West has always, area has always been known as a bit of a hotspot. Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
Yeah, there was there's one other thing. Years later, I came across a painting on a website. There's a painting of a little white boxy craft. And I thought, oh, I know what that is. And it was painted by a guy called Michael Booth. And he saw three of these things. He's riding a bike in the southwest of England somewhere and between these crop fields. And he saw these things making little tracks. They were flying so low. And apparently the next day they were in the field where he'd seen them, but didn't stick around. There was a crop circle. But again, that's just an observation I make. I'm not saying the things I saw were doing anything like that. They could have been, but.
Well, I mean, you were in the countryside and a crop field, so you never know after you left.
I didn't know what was in the other field. So that would be mowed, and it's obviously wouldn't be possible. But
I might ask you if when you have the time, if you could maybe do a sketch, maybe like a diagram of the positioning of where you were and this and the object, and then the accompanying objects.
Okay, yeah, I'll have a go.
Just really so the listeners can have something, they go to the website and then they can have a look, maybe at the diagram if that's possible. And do you and Sarah still discuss it?
No, not really. Before coming on your program, I discussed it in a little chat. And what did she say? She says she feels that it affected her in that she's never felt quite comfortable under the starry skies at night. She'll go there, but she's never wanted to look up and stargaze after that experience. And she said, actually, well, while we were in the sort of in the outhouses of the farm, she would have been more comfortable getting the hell out of there.
Which, you know, is a normal reaction.
Yeah. I know everybody's different, but I'd find it difficult, but harder to believe someone who said, oh, I was there and this thing materialized and there's a UFO and it was amazing and joyous. And I don't know. I think there's something a bit more primordial if you see something like that. I tell you how I felt when I sort of regained my senses. I think how a lab rat must feel when it's presented with a cat for the first time. You realize that you've got something in front of you beyond your ken. You don't know what it is. You don't know what it can do, but something kicks in. that tells you, you know, this is something totally beyond your control and knowledge. And I think most people would be at least very apprehensive, if not downright scared. But then I wasn't in full possession of my faculties while I was looking at the pretty lights and the mesmerism was taking effect. It's only when I force myself to come to, that I had a real assessment of my situation. And I wouldn't like to see one again. I mean, maybe with a lot of people at a distance, but no, not even then, not, you know, point. And yeah, I wouldn't, because it would be the same situation. I mean, I don't think it was evil or particularly good. It was like some incredibly amazing technological thing that was indifferent. I mean, if it wanted to communicate something, it could have, but it was just as if, oh, look, we're here now. We've always been doing this. Look, don't get worried. This happens all the time. Just, you haven't seen it before. It doesn't happen. Just toddle off. You know, you better just wander off, which was, I think, was good advice.
Well, you didn't seem to be in any danger. You know, that's the main thing.
Well, no, but obviously you know about abduction. There's obviously sometimes harmful effects of radiation, but mainly it's the unknown. You don't know what, you know, this big, huge craft is deploying little craft all around here and there, and then two of them have gone behind you. I mean, it's like, I suppose to describe it, say you're in a foreign country, like you're in, in the countryside of Venezuela in a dodgy-looking bar, and you go in, you suddenly realize someone spiked the drink of your girlfriend. She's you know, she's all woozy and losing, and you're feeling a little bit woozy, and you notice that there's two guys gone round to the back entrance of the bar. You know, that's enough. You get out of there, don't you?
Yeah.
Where's my knife? Where's my gun? Let's get out of here. Something's wrong.
Exactly. It's self-preservation. You know, you're out of your depth. You're out of your comfort zone. You know, you just need to make a retreat, an exit.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about it. That's odd. And I a lot of people don't do that. They don't talk about it with the person that experienced it with them.
That is true. Yeah. Very regularly, I hear that. The way Sarah reacted, that's, you know, that's something that's very common. The trance-like state of being bewitched is probably the best way of describing it. I hear very similar accounts to this. Sometimes I can hear an account and it's like, I've heard this before. I know this account. But people that contact me, you know, they, a lot of time they haven't been on any other shows, you know, that, and stuff. So a lot of these accounts seem similar in many ways. Different shapes. I get many different shapes. I don't think I've had a polyhedron. I don't think I have. I'm not going to say I haven't, because obviously I deal with so many people. Be interesting if anyone gets in contact that have maybe had a similar experience to this. Not necessarily in its entirety, just maybe the lights in the forest or even possibly the shape of the object.
Yeah, I don't think the shape is too important. Sarah saw it a little bit more squashed than I did, but the shape was something that we agreed on for the manifest. But it's more I'd expect the atmosphere to be the same, the slowing down of time, the seriousness of everything. It's almost like a cinema or a dream, the mesmerism. I'd expect that to come through in a lot of accounts of things that close up.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say manifest, like it's been, like it was created.
It was creating itself with my permission and my involvement. Wanted to be there, and it wanted to be a certain type of shape and form, but that wasn't definite. It was just, it was becoming, it was like a conjuring. It started with the little lights, and that locks you in, then locks your consciousness in, and it's got your attention. And then it can use your attention and use your focus to delve into your mind to say, well, okay, perhaps if I look more like this, will you be able to see me now? Will you see me now? Because there's definitely a mechanism that, I don't know, if you couldn't see it, it can't get real. That's hard to describe. And it went from nebulous to slightly more solid and more dense. The air got more dense. And then there's something there. I can't see it. Yes, no, I can see it. There is something there. And it's like, oh my God, there's something big there. Why can't I see this big thing? Is it far off? No, it's really close. And then once you lock into an agreed shape, and then you can see it actually all of a sudden manifesting, going from insubstantial, as if like a ghost was to become like a real person.
Right. It's interesting because that is another similarity. Now, sometimes when people have had experiences with entities, for instance, sometimes you'd have people where they'd see the being, the entity, as one form, and others would see it as something else. It could be you're seeing what you can accept, maybe, or whether it's to make it easier for you or whatever. So that's certainly interesting.
Yeah.
The point of the show is making people aware that these things go on. And the other side of the show is not so much entertainment. I know it's a podcast, but it's more of a, so people can come and get it off their chest and in turn, you know, maybe help others to deal with it. Because not everyone is accepting or is blasé with the subject. You know, some people have some very traumatic experiences.
Yeah.
It's difficult for people to adjust because, you know, it's not the norm, so to speak.
And I think you're doing something quite important in building up a historic record.
I'm never short of accounts. I mean, I literally get them daily. It's a point where I can't process them fast enough.
Okay, you're drinking from a fire hydrant.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But you're curating them, you're collecting them, you're putting them in a place. I mean, you could end up with a body of work that deserves to go into Rice University as a record that people in the future can look back on. You know, we may know that we don't know now, but at a certain point there could be breakthroughs and understanding, and then you've got all these witness accounts.
Yeah.
That are more than on the written page. They're, you know, you speak to people and you get insights in terms of the emotional impact or whether people are telling the truth, or you're getting a wide variety. People say, yeah, well, you know, we should be studying more about the witnesses say. There's a lot of people focusing on what they think is happening, but you're more clean, you're more pure. You're just allowing the stories to unfold, and then they're there now in a really accessible form.
Absolutely. I mean, the subject is complex. It's a very complex subject. The deeper you go into it, I'm not talking about what you see on TV and all that kind of stuff. It's a complex subject, and when you mix it with human beings, which can be complex also, you know, people have different reasons for doing things and people see things differently and have different, you know, it's, people are very complex. I know that. So when you mix the two, it's difficult. I avoid people which are on the lecture circuit or all the UFO channels and all that. I avoid those. I try and keep just everyday people. And for people which I have on a show, which in their later years, they come to me and they've never shared these accounts before. And I just feel that to have them on record somewhere, their story, their account will never die when they pass. It's always going to be available. And I hope one day, you know, someone will hear a certain episode and they can take some details from it, whether it's their own experience or for research. An email I had not so long ago from a scientist, and he said that he listened to the show by mistake. Right? He said it wasn't something he was ever interested in. And one of his colleagues said, you know, you should listen to this account. And he said he listened, and then he listened to other episodes, and it went on from there. And he said, this isn't something I've ever been interested in, but I feel there is grounds for some kind of research be looked into a little bit more seriously.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, good things can come out like that.
Oh, they will. I'm quite sure they will as it becomes less of a taboo topic and more possible for people to study it and work out what's going on. Whether some people say it's just totally beyond us. It's probably something that's totally beyond us to fathom. Because, you know, my story, I started off seeing, you know, fairy lights floating in the woods and, you know, it could have ended there. And obviously D20 set off the radar somewhere. So that's something that occurred to me. It was like, I got shown a full spectrum of things, very nebulous, very consciousness interactive, and all of a sudden that those objects were there independent of us. And the Royal Air Force got alerted, and which was, I thought, oh, that's quite good, actually. I quite liked seeing them, you know, on guard, because, you know, it took, from one perspective, those things should not have been there. This is our reality. This is our world. It was trespassing. I know that doesn't sound very welcoming, but you know, you wouldn't like to wake up in the morning and find, you know, a tank from a foreign army in your garden. You'd think, you know, get out.
That's right. But, you know, it could be the other way around. We could be the trespassers.
Yeah, how so?
But the point with the RAF's involvement tells us that something happened, you know, something physical, something was picked up on their radar, and, you know, and they set off to maybe chase these objects the best they can. So, you know, there is that something which definitely happened.
But how would we be trespassing on these things or these? Because it felt to me like they're coming into our reality. It was just an unnatural appearance. It was like, I know, you can explain that in terms of, no, that's me. I've got a frame of reference. This is what I think can and should happen. And all of a sudden, I come into contact with something. It's just because I haven't experienced it before. Doesn't mean it's natural. Yeah, so I see what you're saying. Yeah, they could be equally, could be their home as well, just because I haven't seen them around. So, yeah.
We have these strange experiences that happen. We have paranormal experiences. It could be that you know, the two worlds live side by side, and now and again, you know, it's like a window, like a mirror, and sometimes the other side incurs onto the one side. So it could be a bit of both. Could be that they've been here a lot longer than us. You know, if you go back the olden times with the legends and the folklore and all the old fairy stories. So obviously they've been around for a very long time.
Yeah, I see. I could see now how my stargazing could have been an impingement into their world. Like a spike of light or something appearing, and it was their version of the RAF going out to look and see who's that cheeky bugger come into our world.
Yeah, figuratively, you've just opened up a whole new world. Yeah, absolutely.
Pierced the veil, and was into their reality, and then so they came to see it, and we were in a mixed situation for a while, like you were saying.
Interesting. And you're gonna think about this, and I will think about this as well. It's interesting. So sometimes, you know, you have a page, there's more questions that then get added, but less answer, just more and more questions. That's an interesting one. I enjoyed that, Tad.
Yeah, me too, Nick. Thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to tell my story.
You are more than welcome. It's been lovely meeting you. Tad, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing that for our listeners.
Pleasure.
That's great. Take care of yourself, and I'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Tad. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Tad for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe. And keep watching the skies. Goodbye.